It's down the street from a place called Flesh and Buns. So
that's sexy.
It's a restaurant.
Is that a restaurant or a strip club?
It's a restaurant. I think it's fish and chips. I don't know. Now I gotta find out. You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. So, fellas, it's Sunday, May 21st, when we're recording this, and it looks like it might be the end of life for the A380 program.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Haven't we heard that one before?
I feel like we have.
I think others have talked about it way too much, but we have a real data point this time around.
Yep.
Right? We've, instead of, I think there has been incessant talk about, no, it's not dead yet. There's plenty of opportunities to grow it, make it more efficient. We've got a less grandiose staircase to add seats back. We've got all these other little changes and, the ever-present risk of 11 abreast in coach. But in the meantime, the first operator 10 years ago, Singapore Airlines, now has 4 10-year-old airplanes.
That they're dumping, right? They're just saying, we are not going to renew the lease on these.
Yep.
And so they go back to Airbus, right?
I don't know who owns the lease on them.
Okay.
I don't think it's Airbus directly.
Gotcha.
It's probably ILFC, but
yeah, we can find that out. But yeah, it's a leaseholder. And that's a half of the story, sort of. It's, the other fun. So the half of the story is Airbus, Singapore has decided these 4 are going back, and they've got A350s on order. I don't know if they have the 77X on order. I'll look that up while we're talking here.
They're leased from Doric Asset Finance.
Okay.
Those are the only 4 they lease.
Yeah, and earlier this year, Singapore did order some 777Xs, 20 of the -9 model. So, wow. They've got a lot of new long-haul large planes on order, and I think that Singapore is realizing it's no longer the major hub of the sort of Southeast to Europe flow, Southeast Asia and Australia to Europe.
Mm.
That title has moved over to Emirates and to a lesser extent Qatar and Etihad, and then still some traffic flowing with Singapore, with Thai, with Garuda, Malaysian, Cathay. But, Singapore used to be essentially the hub that made its bank filling up airplanes for a bunch of connecting traffic, and then as an added bonus had some O&D service for Singapore.
Yeah.
Sort of like what the Middle East 3 do today. And I don't know if it's total volume is down, if just the local traffic is down and their costs are too high. There's a lot of different things, and maybe it's just that, the A380 isn't the right aircraft, but they are definitely returning them. And if you want one, you can have it. They are on sale. There's a public website. I'll put the link in the show notes, but they are being listed for sale, targeting the VIP conversion, or VVIP, very, very important conversion market. So, yes. The 2007-2008 Airbus A380-800 for head of state VVVIP conversion, fresh from C-check, 6-year check, and 12-year check landing gear, landing gear is fresh out of overhaul. Engines are on the program by Rolls-Royce Total Care. And the APU is fresh out of overhaul as well. Current layout, 12 first, 60 business, $399 economy. So it sounds like they're selling them with the seats installed.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I guess sort of makes sense, given that there's that would be part of the lease process. But
well, and wasn't it these four particular planes were not necessarily the most fuel efficient A380s, right? They were part of before Airbus's kind of fuel efficiency, more modern fuel management, things like that were instituted. Those features were instituted. I think that was part of it, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it's also, right, it's just early line numbers.
Yeah.
First planes are always a little less efficient. I mean, Boeing has the 787 terrible teens that it spent forever trying to unload because they were known to be just way less efficient. I think, was it Ethiopian took them to run like regional Africa routes?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. I think eventually committed to them. I think they did that during the Farnborough Air Show last year. They made that commitment, but you know, the early planes are always a little less efficient. So that certainly is part of it. And that Singapore's returning these four doesn't mean they're returning all of them.
Yep.
That they're returning four doesn't mean that the program is necessarily dead, but they're returning four and the leaseholder isn't even really trying to put them with commercial markets. I mean, I'm sure they're trying, but that's not the public ad. So
these are line numbers 3, 5, 6, and 10. Mm. Singapore also has line number 8, but they own that one.
They bought it outright. Interesting.
Yeah.
I was going to make a joke earlier, Seth, when you were saying it's not dead yet. All I could think of was Monty Python. But
that's why I said it. So, yeah.
But you kept talking, so I couldn't interject the joke.
I apologize. And next time when making a joke, I'll ensure that there's a proper pause for it to be acknowledged and reflected upon.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it's if anyone out there needs a VVIP A380 and would like to take me along on a ride – you know where to find one.
Yeah. So in this link, I don't know if you guys saw the image I just shared. The livery that they painted on it was all sorts of crazy.
I don't think I've seen it yet. I gotta look this up.
Look in the chat window. Yeah, I'll put it in the notes as well.
That's cool.
Isn't that crazy? So yeah, it's like you'll have to just see the image and it'll be in the show notes or something. But it's really cool looking. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine anyone who buys it is actually going to put their own design on it, not this random whatever that these guys came up with. But
so is the 380 the new 345?
Yes.
Because they tried to do the same thing with all the 345s coming off, tried to sell them as VVIPs. They didn't bite, and they just went to the scrapyard. After, of course, Aerolíneas tried to bid on some.
Oops. Well, what didn't a version 346 that was like 15 or 16 years old just got scrapped?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the market for four engine planes is pretty much dead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the end result of this whole discussion. Like, there's no market for that efficiency.
No, and the density, right?
Inefficiency, sorry.
It's really the density challenge. It's very few markets can support that kind of density at this point.
Well, I agree, and I think it's weird, though. Like, you talk about it, and if you talk with Airbus about it, they'll say, you know, something like 15%, 12 to 15% of all seats in and out of Heathrow today are on A380s.
But
it's a huge number.
It is, but I think it goes back to what drives commercial travel. It's front-end, front cabin economics. And Heathrow supports the first and business cabin.
Yeah. This year. We'll see what happens next.
Well, right. Exactly.
But yeah, a topic, a stat like that is interesting to me. And when if you go back and sort of look at the original sales collateral for what Airbus was using, they're talking about heavily slot-restricted airports and how this aircraft is going to help passenger flow for those airports. Dubai is still very slot-restricted from having just the two runways and some separation and weather challenges from time to time. And we'll talk about that actually a little bit later in this show. But you've got, at the time, Narita was flagged as like a major choke point that the A380 was going to be needed for. And now you're seeing people... certainly the U.S. carriers walking away from Narita.
Yeah.
We went from, it's this crazy super crowded, you can't get in, to like, who wants to be there?
Well, 10 years ago, Haneda wasn't an option.
Sure.
Right. And so 10 years ago was a different market.
The market has changed. It's not that like Airbus was stupid. It's that the market has changed. So, you know, and then there's other markets like India, where it negotiates bilaterals that are based on total number of seats and sort of, and Canada even does the same thing. They won't let people with A380s essentially show up. And India has relaxed it, I think, a little bit in some cases, but not across the board. So you don't get those larger aircraft in. Canada certainly hasn't relaxed it with Emirates. They're still a sort of pissing contest there.
So do we think the 380 is going to die first or the 748?
How do you define die?
Officially.
Like the line is dead?
Production
or...
halts?
Yep.
380 will end before 748.
Yeah, that would be my consensus as well.
Yeah,
I think it has to for two reasons. One, freighters. The 380 freighter option never came about. Among other things, getting freight up to the top deck on a loader was a mess. And two, the Air Force One.
Yep. That's a good point. And, you know, I was going to say one of the things I look at JFK as a market. Right.
Yeah.
Where again, you're a little slot restricted. You've got lots of flow. You need to get people in and out. And the A380 actually causes probably more havoc than it helps. Like there's actually
because of separation,
because of approaches. They're, you know, trying to implement new, more efficient approaches for planes coming into JFK, into the New York area in general. And the A380 completely screws those up. Like you insert an A380 into that pattern and you got to have longer times between the planes. And so from what I understand, the controllers hate them. I mean, it's just a hated thing.
Isn't the 777X going to have a similar
weight problem?
Or was it the 787-10?
One of the two of them.
Didn't one of them just come out with a, like, you need 10 miles in front of it?
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to look it up, but yeah, one of them did.
I'll pull it up right now. I know who's shared on Twitter. But yeah, it was like really, really weird thing. Yeah, 10 miles both ahead, in front of, and behind all 787-10 aircraft. The A380s only require 7 behind.
Do they know? Do they say why? Is it wake turbulence or is it?
No, it's not. It's not defined at all.
Hmm.
It came out on the 17th. It came out last week.
That's interesting. That's gonna wreak even more havoc.
Yeah, and that may just be because it's new.
Yeah. Yep.
The A380 introductions had a similar order, and then it was changed. And the A400, believe it or not, which is a prop. That's a military cargo something-ish from Airbus. So.
Well, that's what the original Beluga was based on, right?
The
400? No, it was 300.
The A400. Okay. FOS, if you look at it, is like it's
C-130-ish.
Yeah, it's got four engines that are props, and it's actually pretty impressive if you watch some of the air show demonstrations from it.
I've seen it now. I saw it at the Paris Air Show 2 years ago and at Farnborough last year. I'm pretty sure it flew it both. It is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Sort of short field operation. It can back up. And they can twist the rotor. Like, they can twist the blades on the prop.
To reverse.
So while it spins, like, while they're spinning... You know, while the motor is spinning the right same direction, the propellers twist on the axle and it just backs itself up.
It's pretty great.
So like you can actually land like the wrong way on a runway if it's only got a taxiway at one end and then back up the length of the runway if you had to. Or like taxi out and then like back up to get yourself a little extra lane. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
And not many airplanes have a reverse mode on them.
So This A380 discussion kind of brings us back to the middle of market concept and where that is, with a lot of people saying there's needs to be a middle of market plane from Boeing for different airlines that need that kind of capability to replace 757s. But it's kind of meeting the same – like we still don't know where this fits in, right, Seth? I mean, it's like the middle of market stuff doesn't – what we define as middle of market, or what we think of as middle of market, 757
size. I think, well, here's the problem. The middle of the market is not the 757.
People think it's bigger, right?
Well, as Boeing has defined it, apparently it's bigger, right? Instead of 200-ish seats, which the 752 has, it's like 250. That's why it's now going to be a twin aisle, supposedly. Because even like the 753, just the stretch version, doesn't have the legs. It doesn't have, you know, you need a way bigger engine to be able to do some of those things. And the range that they want to put on it is, I think they're talking about like 5,000 nautical miles instead of 4,000. So it's significantly greater range than the 752 and significantly more seats. So when you look at a Aer Lingus and Iceland Air, to a lesser extent, United and some of the other airlines that are sort of heavy 752 consumers, or Delta even too, like sort of converting off of it to something else, do they actually want similar capacity and similar range, or do they want to increase both capacity and range by 25%?
Well, it seems like Boeing's just telling them what they want.
Well, yeah, and you know, we saw how well that worked with the 748.
Yeah.
Or the 737 MAX, quite frankly. There's some question about how well that's going to be long-term. But it's interesting to me, and I sort of was talking with someone about Iceland Air in that sense, and yes, transatlantic traffic continues to grow, but most of that is growing because of new point-to-point services, not new connect through a convenient hub most of the way there services. And so, yeah, I mean, WOW obviously is expanding big. They just added Tel Aviv. So, you know, if you want a cheap flight to Israel, go check that out. But it's Norwegian expansion. It's Level, which is the new IAG group low-cost carrier that's supposed to provide transatlantic service starting next year. It's things like that. So does the hub operation... You know, we saw sort of hubs get decimated in Europe as point-to-point services from Ryanair and EasyJet and several others came along. Do these point-to-point services across the Atlantic start to have a similar effect? And at that point, then, does mom cannibalize the 787? Right? Because for transatlantic, it's perfect. It's actually, the 787 is way too much airplane for transatlantic.
Yeah, yeah.
Or from the East Coast, at least. From the West Coast, you know, we heard Norwegian had to cancel its Vegas flights because it was too hot to get off the ground.
But so that's, I mean, that comes back to me, like, okay, you have 250 seats, your range is 5,000 miles. Like, why not give it a greater range?
Because that's the 787 or the A330.
And so that's where I'm kind of hung up on this middle of market thing. Like, it seems like you're just designing a shorter range 757. And in some cases with more seats.
Well, I think part of it might be cargo. You don't need cargo on a lot of those thin routes.
True.
Right, so you could build a frame that supports less weight to move passengers and not so much cargo.
Where I struggle with that is like places like Edinburgh or, you know, Belfast or places that have gone away even for point-to-point service on United.
Bristol.
Like, you're not going to put a new middle-of-market plane on that. They couldn't make it work with the 757.
So the theory is, right, that the cost per seat mile will have to be way lower than what the 757 offers. That's part of the theory. Yep. But it's way more seats. And so, but yes, I generally agree with you. Also, Bristol and Edinburgh are, like, prime targets for, after they figure out what its range really is, the 737 MAX with Norwegian.
Yeah.
Out of Stewart and out of Providence. That's the sort of market they want to
go after.
Vigorously pursue. So it's the whole thing is interesting to me. Obviously, you know, I love new planes and I'd like to see more and better and things like that. But like part of me wonders, is there not a way to take the 787, even like the -8, which is the right number of seats, arguably, for mom? And be like, no, this one, we pulled two fuel tanks out, so we made it way lighter, but it also, we cut the range, something like that. And I don't think you can. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can't, or they would have come up with that as an option already. But I don't know. Maybe when they designed the -3 originally, did it have shorter range also? I think it did.
The -3 757? Yeah.
787.
Oh, I don't know.
I think it did.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was designed. Yeah. Okay. So that was only 2,500 nautical miles, though. That was even way shorter.
Was it? I thought it was at least transatlantic.
So I'm reading here, and who knows if this is right because, you know, it's on the internet. But
we've had problems with that lately.
3,000 nautical miles. So I think just short of transatlantic.
Which would have been silly.
Stupid. Well, it was targeted for Asia.
Like within Asia?
Sort of regional, like all the flights that go from Shanghai and in Beijing to Tokyo, essentially, that sort of circle.
Yeah.
So let me see here. It had a slightly smaller wing, and so it could use a smaller. It was actually a smaller gate space. And it used blended winglets instead of raked wingtips. So, yeah, the only people who ever ordered it were JAL and ANA, and they converted to the Dash 8.
Interesting.
So,
I don't know where this goes, because I feel like you're right, Seth. I think the 787-8, like, you could modify it and reduce the range and maybe even increase seating a little bit and get kind of the perfect blend of an airplane that you want.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the Dash 3 was the opportunity to do that. And maybe they could maybe they'll revisit it. Who knows? Although, and you're right, the Dash 3 was scrapped because of production issues and all the other things that went along with the delays for the 787. But it seems like that would have been a good way to do it to me.
Yep.
In some ways. But I don't know. It needed more range than what that would have had. And I don't know if the smaller wings would have precluded that. Yep. Also, it's just, the Dash 8 is less efficient than the Dash 9 from a cost and chasm perspective. So, right, like, the smaller ones are never as efficient. So you don't want to necessarily make it smaller,
mm-hmm,
so much as cheaper to operate. And I'm not sure there's a good way to do that. But I sort of felt the same way when the A330neo was announced. Like, why are they designing it to go so much further than the current version as opposed to just being way cheaper to operate than the current version? Like, is there really a market for a 330 size aircraft that needs the extra 1,000 miles of range?
Yeah, no, and that's true.
Apparently there is, but I don't know.
Well, I think they're Airbus is hedging on 757 replacements.
Like, but that's the 321LR, isn't it?
Right. Didn't you just say the 320neo?
No, 330neos.
Oh, 330neo.
I think which has way longer range. Like, the 330 already had longer range, and the Neo is, like, way longer.
Well, I think the range is a side effect. I think that's probably more just operating efficiencies.
Yeah, although I guess so. I don't know. Part of me is like thinks that you have a smaller fuel tank, or, you know, extra alternate fuel tanks that you can add if you need that to save weight or things like that. I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's some ways to say, yeah, this plane can fly 8,000 miles, but if you only want the 5,000-mile version, we can do that too, and you actually can save some money buying it and operating it. And the 321neo essentially is that, right? If you want the LR, it's an extra fuel tank in the tail. Right. They made some room, and they put in the piping for it, and apparently all of them, like, have everything except the tank installed, and you can convert back and forth.
When you say operating efficiencies, Foz, what do you mean?
Well, the newer engines tend to operate, burn less fuel.
Gotcha.
So with the same weight and fuel, you go further.
Exactly. So with the thing that I don't understand is, like, between the what Boeing's doing with the 789s now being the same size as the 772 and the 77 Max, the lines are all being blurred, and I think it all boils down to operating certificates.
Mm, gotcha.
I mean, like, pilots?
Yeah, because this, you know, 7-7 on the Boeing side, they're a little bit more consistent, but a 7-7 pilot will be, in theory, be able to fly a 7-7 Max or whatever they're calling it.
Yes.
And the 330neo will be able to be flown with a 330 pilot without having to change, you know, recert or anything.
It's a extra, like, an upgrade type, not a new type.
Right. And that might be something that comes from the airline, so they don't have to renegotiate contracts with the unions.
Yeah, and I mean, well, that's been going on for a while, too. Like, the 7576 flight deck is very similar, and United actually has a common pool where their 75 and 76 pilots all fly the same, right? That has been for a while, I feel like, that's been around.
Right, and I think the airlines like that, that ability to do that. So I think that might be why we're seeing so much overlap is based on crew bases.
Yeah.
Could be.
Because, yeah. I mean, think about it, right? If you have a route where you have lower RSM, you would want the cheaper pilots on it.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, you know, as an example, Bangkok to Sydney, you could fly a 330neo as opposed to a 350, and your pilots are getting paid differently.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think – so that's actually fascinating to me. We could talk about those routes at some point. I think it's fascinating which planes are used on some of the Auckland-Sydney to Asia service, because it's not necessarily the best planes in the fleet. So I wonder how those markets are doing. Like that's something I watch on FlightRadar quite a bit, is between Sydney, Melbourne, Auckland, Christchurch. I watch kind of the Asian flights out of those, and it's interesting what equipment gets used, just who's flying where. A lot of 787s, some A330s, which is
interesting. That's, I think, is the volume of seats that are needed.
Yep, yep. Speaking of FlightRadar, you can now track the A320neos and the Boeing 737 Maxes on their website, which is kind of cool. And this is because they got ICAO designators, right, Seth?
Yeah, so the ICAO aviation organization, they gave them, A31N or A19N, A20N, and A21N. So they get NEO. And it's different, actually, because IATA didn't give the 320neo a new designator. It's just 319, 320, and 321 in the three-digit version.
Yeah.
Which is, we were talking about that a little earlier. It's, in some ways, that makes a lot of sense because it is just a different engine. And right, if you swapped like a GE for a Rolls Royce on the 757, it's still just a 757.
Yeah.
Was it GE? Is it Pratt? It was Pratt. Sorry.
Pratt and Whitney's.
Yeah. Pratt for Rolls Royce. It was still just a 757. So, like, it in many ways that makes sense. But we also have the designators for the 737 MAX lines, which I thought we did.
Yep.
How do I see them? Oh, there it is. Alphabetical order is apparently hard for Wikipedia to manage.
Wait. That implies organization in Wikipedia.
Hey, listen. For ICAO, it's B37M, 38M, and 39M, and then 7M7, 7M8, and 7M9 for the aircraft types. So good to know if you're, you know, a complete dork and care about that sort of thing. So yeah. If you're listening to this, probably good for you to know.
Awesome news.
Interestingly, they don't have an ICAO, or excuse me, an IATA code for the Sukhoi Superjet 100.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that because I was trying to track, you know, where I could get them, like when I was looking to possibly fly on it. And I was trying to find it, and I just had to do – I think I just had to look up carriers that I knew had them.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. I wonder if you – on FlightRadar, if you do SU-95 for the aircraft type.
If it works.
You should be able to get them.
Yeah.
A lot of them flying in Mexico for Interjet.
Yep.
Obviously in Russia.
CityJet.
And CityJet has a couple that three of them are already seconded to Brussels Airlines.
Yep.
See, I actually almost had one booked for next week when we're on Europe, but that fell apart with my travel planning.
I was actually looking at a trip in the late summer, and it came up, and I was like, Sukhoi? Really? Like on Brussels Airlines. I was like, yeah, I might have to do this just for that.
It was actually, what's funny to me about them is because they're operated by CityJet, they're like a whole different range of flight numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Not what you expect.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I mean, they're a regional operator, just like you get like whatever SkyWest is like in the 4,000s for United or whatever numbers those are. But it's like a whole separate number of thousands for Brussels Airlines too. It's kind of funny. So easy to identify in that way, but also threw me off a little bit.
Yeah.
Do the C-Series have their own?
The C-Series does, actually, I think.
Yeah, yeah, CS1 and CS3.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Those are also easy to find in Europe.
Yeah, it was actually Swiss Airlines. I was looking at another trip via Swiss, and they had one on the route I was going to fly. And I was like...
Yeah, so Swiss has the 100s, and Air Baltic has the 300s.
Very nice.
There you can... Although I actually was looking at those the day where I'm leaving London, they're bringing their 737 instead of the C-Series, so they didn't get my business.
You never know. They might switch out.
Literally, that was a legitimate, like, I accept that I'm not normal in many ways, but that would have, if the C-Series had been there, I would have paid extra and gone out of my way to fly on it. But instead, I'm flying an E90 out of London City.
Gotcha. Last topic is Dubai. The Al Maktoum International Airport expansion has been delayed until 2018. And it sounds like this is maybe a financing issue or what is going on here? Because it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, they really wanted to get that airport open to kind of relieve some of the pressure off of Dubai International.
How could they have financing issues? They're subsidized.
This is Dubai World Center Airport, right? This is the airport that's like half an hour south of town, halfway between Abu Dhabi and Dubai City. And it's five parallel runways. It's this massive, massive operation, and it's 90% cargo today.
Yeah.
There's a couple of Qatar Airways flights. Fly Dubai has a few and was supposed to move a bunch more of its flights over, but it's now being delayed. And the story, as told by Arab News, is essentially that the Dubai government actually did secure $3 billion in financing, and that it's still gradually ramping up, but it's still, they're delaying it until a while. They're delaying it again in terms of migrating over.
Mm.
And I'm making sure I get the details right here. There's also Fly Dubai is still supposed to move over, was originally planned to move over in the third quarter of this year, and now it's being delayed. So in January, we heard it was going to happen in Q3. Now it's 2018, and so it's they're trying to wait. The construction's taking too long. Essentially, it's not clear if it's financing or other reasons, but it is taking too long to get it built out.
Gotcha.
To grow the terminal in a way, and right now the terminal's a bus station. It's a gorgeous bus station, but it's a bus station. You walk out. It's all on ground level. You walk out, you board it, you get on a bus, and you ride your bus out to the airport plane, which, typically I enjoy because you get cool pictures of planes, but it's also most of the commercial flights are in the middle of the night, so it's dark out.
Yeah,
it's like someone went to B-84 10 years ago at Houston and thought it was a good idea.
Much larger waiting areas, I promise. that's funny. Like, the waiting areas are completely the right size. So, in that sense, it's reasonable. But, and it's got nice concessions and all those other things, but it's not what you would consider a modern sort of fancy airport in most ways. There's like one priority pass lounge. There's, I think McDonald's is where I ended up eating, which was nice. I had a McChicken wrap of some sort. But it's not, and they say it can handle 7 million passengers a year. It's supposed to handle 26 with the construction being completed. So that's a big, big growth spurt. And maybe they're building real concourses and stuff. I haven't actually looked at what the plans are for that construction. But when I was there a couple of years ago, November, it was small and bad, and it was a bus station. So getting it, there's also the part where it's like it's way out of town. And getting it to it's not on the metro line. Getting people to actually use it is going to suck.
Do you think they're going to? I mean, is that part of the expansion plan? Is to put the train out to the new airport?
I think they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. But it's still. I mean, it's a longer ride if nothing else. So it's going to mass train. When you move something 30 miles away, it's a lot harder to get there.
Yep.
A lot slower to get there. The other question is sort of, is this delay because Emirates all of a sudden is having trouble filling its planes?
Mm.
And some of the commercial questions that come about it that go back to our A380 discussion earlier of like the massive flow and when people stop filling up those planes, does it make sense to keep flying them as much and all the things that come around that? So I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. I didn't realize how far south, I guess it is southwest it is from downtown. I'm looking at a map right now. It's close to, I guess, the Palm.
Nothing.
The Palm Jumeirah. That's the closest thing. The Palm Jumeirah is the closest thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually not that far. It's 28 miles south of Dubai Airport. as the crow flies.
Yeah, I mean,
you
look at the
there's
map,
major
though.
Highways and whatever, but it's like getting down there, and there are the major highways, but it's still really kind of in the middle of nowhere compared to the Dubai airport. And obviously things are growing towards the south, so that's the direction everything's expanding into, but it's pretty far away.
I was going to say, like, you look at it, if it was just a little further southwest, it'd basically be, you'd be halfway between Abu Dhabi airport and Dubai.
It's right on the border.
It's like,
seriously, if you look at it in Google Maps, basically just south of the, so there's two palms. There's Palm Jumeirah and Palm Jebel Ali.
Mm-hmm.
It's closer to the southern one, which is Palm Jebel Ali. That's not the famous one that you're used to seeing in all the ads and stuff. And it's really not far at all from the border with Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. I mean, you just go a few miles south and you're there, which is kind of
six and a half miles. Yeah. To the border.
Well, it's easier for the Etihad bus.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, they're building it up, like they're sort of taking that whole aerotropolis concept of building up a whole industrial city around it and mm-hmm. sort of trying to plan it correctly and building residential and building commercial and building industrial and all those other things that need to go along with it. And part of me wonders, you know, how much of the delay will be attributed to the demand for that stuff also not following, again, for financial reasons and, you know, growth of the economy and whatnot. But I don't know, man. It's like trying to make that all come together is crazy. And it's so far. I did it from the Sofitel, I think we stayed at, to get down there for the Dubai Air Show. And it's just a long drive. It took like an hour, felt like, or 45 minutes to an hour to get out there. And part of that was traffic and whatever for the show, but it's not super convenient to town.
No, and Dubai traffic can be pretty brutal even on weekends.
Yeah, I mean, they've got their major highways, but you're still stuck in traffic on a highway.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Anything else, guys? Anything else? Oh, we should mention, Seth, I'll let you mention it next week.
Yeah. So as briefly alluded to earlier, we're going to be in London Memorial Day weekend, U.S. Memorial Day. I don't know what it is for other people, but Stephen and Foz, you guys are on the inaugural flight from Portland, right?
Yep. We're on the Portland-London Heathrow nonstop.
Sweet. So you guys are on that Delta inaugural.
Yep.
It is Delta, isn't it?
It's Delta.
Yes.
I'm fact-checking myself along the way here. Sorry. So you guys get on Saturday. I come in a couple days earlier to go do some work before the weekend festivities begin. But if anyone's around London and wants to meet up for a beer at some point on Saturday or Sunday, give a holler because, you know, we drink beer and that's fun.
Absolutely. We'll be recording a show from there too, probably. Maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Show up. You might even get to speak on the show.
Yeah, so tweet us or you can leave a comment on this episode and we'll get it, or email us too. You can do that. Yeah, so if there's nothing else, I think follow us on Twitter at @dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. Until the next show, thanks for listening. Happy flying. Bye, guys.
See ya.
Take care.